My name is Kirk. That rhymes with irk. And usually I almost never get irked. Okay, that's all. Thank you, Sean. But I do have a few things that irk me. And irk is fun to say. Just like my name is fun to say, I guess. Saying it doesn't irk me. Things that irk Kirk. Ready? I don't like to be manipulated. Or to see folks manipulated. Experiencing or seeing that really irks me. And when Paul wrote to Philemon, he was being really manipulative. Paul wanted Philemon to release Onesimus from his servitude, and I think he also wanted to challenge Philemon to do more than simply do the right thing in his life. I also think he wanted to get him to give money to the cause. Today we're reading, well, almost all of this very short chapter. In it, Paul uses cleverness to drive home his manipulative agenda. He played on Onesimus' name. It means useful. And he called him formerly useless, but now useful. He played on Philemon's sense of fairness, too. I prefer to do nothing without your consent. What? So I slaved in the kitchen all day, right? It's just like that. Or if he has wronged you in any way or owes you anything, charge it to my account. I say nothing about your owing me even your own self. There's no response to this letter other than exactly what Paul wants. He masterfully manipulated this letter into one that cannot have another response except for Onesimus' freedom and equality. Of course, you might be thinking, but freedom and equality, you talk about that all the time. What better cause could there be? And freedom from slavery, how could you find fault with a letter that calls for the release of a slave? Well, I think that we mistakenly interpret this letter into one that is anti-slavery, because it's not. I think the letter is one that recognizes equality, but also doesn't address the power one class has over another in the marketplace and in society. And we go beyond the message of this chapter, this letter, when we turn it into something that it's not. See, Paul didn't try to end slavery with this letter. And I also know that the slavery present in Paul's time was not like the horrific chapter in the history of the United States, where one group of people terrorized, stole, took away rights from, exploited, raped, tortured, and killed people because they thought that their skin color made them less than. Onesimus would have become a slave over a debt, or perhaps as an apprentice. He may or may not have been treated well, but he would not have been rounded up from his home and transported on a ship where half the inhabitants died, only to be sold at auction if you survived. Onesimus was a slave in a society where slavery, while different from the slavery present in the United States and slavery that still exists today, it was different, very different. And this letter should never be used to support slavery, as it has been used in the past, or to support the abolition of slavery as it has been and still is used. It doesn't fit with either. This letter is something different. And it uses manipulation to achieve what it wants. Paul wanted Onesimus back as a helper. I also said that Paul wanted to receive an offering for the cause. His language about, I say nothing about you owing me even your own self. And then the other bit, which is actually just at the end, or after the end of this morning's reading, one thing more, prepare a guest room for me, for I am coming through your prayers to be restored to you. That's Paul's coded message, because when he came to town, he took a collection. He was coming soon, and Philemon should have been getting things ready for a good offering. So there, this beautiful book that you've, this chapter that you've read before, Paul was being really manipulative, and that really irks me, and I don't think that it's okay to manipulate people even when it's for a good cause. But maybe we can find something good in the letter anyway. Maybe you can look for the message underneath the manipulation. Maybe it's a lesson to be learned by not doing this. For instance, if you're going to be an advocate, and I think that we should be advocates for causes, we should be advocates for justice. If we're going to be advocates, manipulation is not the method to use. If we're going to be an advocate, listening to people you advocate for is the most important thing you can do. Remember this phrase. I've said it before in other contexts, but it fits right in here. Nothing about us without us. If you want to advocate for a group of people who are underserved or people who are exploited, talk to the people who are underserved or exploited. Get to understand and don't try to make things right by being, you know, I know, because I'm fine and I'm going to help you. No, nothing about us without us. That statement and today's Bible reading, they bring up a couple of questions. Maybe they're not to answer today. These are deeper questions, difficult questions, and maybe something that you don't see when you first read it, and maybe I'm just bringing it up and I'm going beyond the bounds, but it struck me this way. What challenges around privilege are in this passage, personally and communally as a church? While we have our problems, you know, making sure that we pay the bills and everything like that, we also live. The people of St. Paul's live in a dominant culture. We don't have to think about moving into a community and having people not like us for some reason that's beyond our control, especially the color of our skin or our social class or something. Onesimus didn't have that same privilege. Philemon did. Paul did from where he was coming from. So what challenges are present in the Bible reading and then overall for us around privilege? And how does a change in relationship, one that does away with privilege and advantage, feel to the people on both sides? For when privilege is removed, and most of us can only see that from one perspective, if a group of people that were not privileged now have the same privilege as this group feels somehow persecuted because now they don't get to run things anymore. And this group here is saying, you know, we just want to be able to do the same thing. So how does a change in relationship, and this is going back, I've been talking about the words attending to one another for years and years. When we attend to one another, privilege is removed. When I say welcome, and we're supposed to welcome, but when I say you're welcome here, there's privilege attached to that because I'm the one who has the power and I can welcome you to my place. When we attend to one another, we look at each other as equals. We care for one another. We attend to one another's needs. We remove privilege from that. So how does a change in relationship, one that does away with privilege and advantage, feel to the people on both sides? Think about that one. In our congregation and in the United Church of Christ, it's largely a white denomination. It really is. And in very short order, based on some things that have already been written and some stuff that came through with the University of Chicago Divinity School and Chicago Theological Seminary, the UCC is releasing a new adult curriculum called White Privilege. Let's talk. And this is from our president and general minister, Reverend John Dorhauer. Here's what he says. As an extension of our ongoing commitment to sacred conversations on race, it is time that this still largely white denomination wrestle with its investment in whiteness and learn all it can about the manifestations and impact of white privilege. This curriculum written by five gifted authors with decades of experience teaching about race and privilege is presented to enable such dialogue and to take place on every level of the church. Folks, a conversation on race, a conversation on privilege is one of the most difficult, really, because how do you tell a person who has problems that they have privilege? How do you change the conversation from, how dare you say that about me? You don't know what you're talking about, to, yeah, I get it, I understand. And what do we do to make a place where we're all attending to one another instead of one where one class has power over another, even in small ways? So as difficult as that will be, as difficult as it is, let's look for opportunities upcoming for us to engage in that difficult and important conversation. Because folks, I got to tell you that something about being the church, we have existed for more than 100 years. We're coming up on 125 years very shortly. But our world is not the same as it was in 1894 or 1954 or even 1994, as 2004 or 2005. Our conversations are different. The people who might come to church are different. And we can't have the same conversations over and over again. And some of the things that we need to talk about and some of the things that we need to do as a church are difficult. And if we want to engage a world that is suspect of the church, if we want to engage a world that doesn't really have any need for church or doesn't think they have any need, we have to respond. We have to find ways to have conversations that are difficult and address topics that are difficult. Not be stuck in one direction, but be a community where we attend to all. So, look for those opportunities. And we're going to continue to be the church because that is our identity. Amen.